What happens in the sky affects life down here on Earth. The Celestial Compass shows you how and guides your way with astrology you can use from professional astrologer Kathy Beal. Every episode features her light-hearted, practical forecasts and navigational tips, blended with humor, optimism, and a love of patterns, symbolism, and pop culture references. Kathy translates technicalities into concepts that apply to real life. You'll learn how the current moment ties to where we've been, from the recent past to cycles that last happened years ago, and get a look at where we're heading. And much more, from special topics to special guests. The Celestial Compass, enlightening, entertaining, and empowering. Here's your host, Kathy Beal.
Greetings, Earthlings. This is Kathy Beal of EmpowermentUnlimited.net, your host for Celestial Compass. We have a provocative and entertaining topic for today. Can astrology give information about past lives? But first, a brief forecast for the month of May. We're all over the map in May. You're already noticing, I'm sure, a shift in the energy. In many ways, it is extremely active, with people feeling like they want to be out and about and getting in touch with lots of people, doing many, many things. There's a sense of being released from cabin fever and making up for a lot of lost time. It could be very, very fun with a number of bodies moving into Gemini, which I call short attention span theater. It's really good for multitasking and for darting from one thing to another, being very, very flexible, and also finding the humor in whatever is going on. At the same time, there are a couple of influences that take us backward, that slow us down ever so slowly and imperceptibly. Mercury is gradually moving toward his next retrograde of the year, which begins at the end of the month. Saturn will retrograde before then, and he's bearing down on the spot where he will be for the next Saturn-Uranus square, which is exact next month. This is stress testing our communities, our networks, our use of technology, the new constructs that moved into place in our lives, in our society, in our world at the December solstice. And while this is all going on, there is additionally a sense or a taste of things to come. So we will feel like we're in many spots of the time space continuum all at once. A little bit of hovering in the here and now, a little bit of going back over old territory, that which will be particularly strong once Mercury goes retrograde, but also a taste of what's to come next year when Jupiter, the planet of expansion and beneficence and somewhat boundlessness, enters the sign of Pisces on the 20th. It's going to hang out there into July and then duck back and finish its year in Aquarius. But we're getting kind of like a coming attractions trailer of what part of the vibe will be like next year when Jupiter heads into Pisces for well and true. And you can look back 12 years and get a sense of what was expanding in the way you were looking at things. Jupiter at this point will be in the same sign as the ruler of Pisces, Neptune, which is absolute boundlessness and transcendence. So you could have optimism, faith, and run around singing Tomorrow from Annie, regardless of what is going on in your life. And for more about this, look at my forecast for the month of May, which you can find at Ohm Times and also at my site, empowermentunlimited.net. And now for the meat. Our guest today is my friend and colleague, Andrew Brewer. He is a clairvoyant, an astrologer, and a past life reader and researcher. He's the author of 10 books, and he has been listed in over 30 publications as one of the top 50 psychics in the world, one of the top 100 light workers in the world, and one of the top 30 psychics in the United States. He has been studying reincarnation in past lives for more than 40 years. Andrew has published many prospective past life matches, some for celebrities and some for himself. And for more information about this, visit his site, andrew-brewer.com. Welcome, Andy.
Kathy, thank you. Good to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
I'd like to start with a question I have not asked you yet, which is, how did you get into astrology?
I think most people get into astrology because they're confused about themselves and they look for ways to try to give them a clue as to who they are and what they can do. So I started doing astrology that way when I was in my early 20s and just got progressively more and more interested in it. And then when the past life thing kind of concurrently happened for me in my early 20s, I guess my early 20s is when my life changed pretty dramatically. I just kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. And, you know, it's a fascinating thing to study. And I wanted to understand relationships with myself. And eventually I figured out a way to check out if I was going on a date, how I would get along with this person. And I started, you know, I just kind of went from there. But initially I was confused. I guess I'm still confused, you know, all these years later. But that was why I started.
Interesting. And was this self-study? Did you study with teachers, gurus, just being an Aquarian? I'll bust you in that regard. Did you just figure it out on your own?
I read a lot of books. I initially started with Alan Oaken, a book that was super important to me early on that had just come out when I was a young guy, was Astrology, Karma, Transformation by Stephen Arroyo. I read Steve Forrest's book. And I tried to piece it together. Initially, I think, you know, most people look at astrology in this cookbook mentality, which is overwhelming. But ultimately, I got a sense of it, and I began to make up my own ways of doing astrology, much more evolutionary type of astrologer. If I hadn't been such a bozo, I would have met Dane Rudjar back in the day. But, I just was ultimately... You know, I kind of went more as a clairvoyant, but I used astrology as a way. I really primarily use it in terms of dentistry now more than anything else. I look at relationships between people. I think astrology really is a very good tool for seeing how people are likely to meld together. So.
And we'll come back to that in a second because I can see where that is leading. But another foundation piece here. So how did your interest in past life research develop? You say it was around the same time.
So I was one of those little kids, but I was in the 1950s that saw stuff as a little boy. And of course, in the 1950s, Bridie Murphy or no Bridie Murphy, that was not really something that went talked about too much. So I had these images in my head and it just confused me. All these things just confused me. And I tried to understand why these things in my head were there. And so I went to California. I went to California to be an actor, but I ended up being, you know, doing these other things. And I tried to understand why I kept seeing stuff and what if it meant anything. And that's how I started with past life regressions. And I went to a bunch of psychics in San Francisco. And I'm sort of a psychic prodigy. When I was in my early 20s, almost like within a year, crazy. And so for me, past lives became a defining piece of my life in that I wanted, you know, like, you know, my father died right in front of me when I was 22. I think that had an impact on me that probably was brought in with it. A lot of people in my life died. I had a girlfriend who died in her 20s. So death was a big part of my life when I was young. And I think all those things combined to give me a sense of like, well, what's the point? What happens? what happens when we die? What do we do? Why are we here? And that was the initial catalyst for me to start. And then it just went.
He just went from there. Okay, so now my understanding of your process is that it doesn't start with astrology. It starts with an energetic read. Would that be accurate? And then you use astrology to test what you're getting?
Yes.
Can you talk some about how your process works? Let's say you would have a person cross your mind. You've done some analyses of people who are prominent now in the news now, and we'll talk about one of them in a minute. But so something would get your attention, and then what would you do?
So initially what would happen is I would think about someone, and I would have images pop in my head. And then I would try to basically trick the computer into giving me a picture that would correspond to the story in my head. So then I would do a photo analysis. I would have to, like, the photos light up to me. I mean, it's kind of like a backlight. Hard to explain. It sounds crazy. But it's like the photos light up. So once I have the photo and I have my people, then I look at them, I think about them as a clairvoyant, and once I've gone through whatever my little process is, I also do photo where I take the photos and stack them on top of each other, because I do think there's a biometric. I think past lives look alike. Once I've done those things, then I do the astrology to try to test. Astrology is like the final frontier. If they look the same and everything matches, but your astrology is wonky, then I throw them out.
So let's back up just a second here. So you get a feeling about an individual, and then how do you link? Maybe there's no way you can describe this part of the process. How do you link a specific person to a prior life?
Usually what happens is that I will think about a person and details of other life come to me. And so they give me storyline. So then what I try to do is take that storyline and try to condense it. And then I search for somebody that matches the story in my head. If I find people that match my story, then usually I can get information about them. Then I look at their photos, and then hopefully I have their birthdays, and then I can compare their charts. But the initial is, I guess you would say, a clairvoyant vision, or something pops in my head. The person I'm looking for is this, 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 and this. Then I look for somebody who is this, 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 and this. Then I look at their photos. If their photos match and they match my story, then I start paying attention.
And there are specific types of aspects that you focus on in synastry being the comparison between two charts, how two charts interact with each other. There are two that you look at, or why don't you tell me what particular aspects do you look at? It's not like, does it look like the same person in astrologically? That's a very different thing. If not even quite like, does it look like this person would get along with this other person? You have, what are the aspects that you, types of aspects?
So what I'm looking for are very, very tight orbs. I'm looking for, this planet has the same degree measure as some other planet. I mean, that's the first part. So what I'm looking at is, let's say that somebody's sun is exactly conjunct somebody else's, the other person's Mars, or their Pluto is conjunct their Saturn, or their, and if you have the time and you can do the moon's really important, but you don't always have the moon. But if you have the moon connects to the nodes, or the moon connects to. So I'm looking for, initially I'm looking for conjunction.
The and three really things tight ones. That I, okay.
Really okay. Tight ones. I mean, I'm super meticulous in terms of the orbs as an astrologer. So like, my natal Mars is 16 Aries. If somebody says, oh, my Venus is conjunct your Mars and it's 5 Aries, I go, I don't think so. If it's 15 Aries, then I'll pay attention to it. So to me, it's like a 2-3 degree max. Anything over 3 or 4 degrees, I sort of throw out as not being part of my analytic. So I'm looking really, I don't mean to be so astrology geeky here, but I'm looking for super tight degree measures first. In order, the things that I pay attention to are going to be conjunctions, the quincunx, 150 degree, and then the opposition. Those are my three primary ones. Sometimes the squares, maybe. Sometimes the trines, maybe. But really is those three. 0, 150, 180.
And we're going to finish your thought, and then we're going to take a break. I was just going to say, we'll go into those second and third types of aspects in more detail in the next section, but right now we're coming up on our first break. So we'll be back in a few minutes.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network. Life is a flow, and enlightenment is simply harmonizing with the way life really is. Then you find that life is effortless, benevolent, and free of all suffering. Hey everyone, this is GP Walsh, and I want to invite you to my brand new radio show that's launching right here on OM Times Radio called The Flow of Enlightenment. I've been a spiritual teacher for decades, and my greatest pleasure is being able to share with you these deep and highly practical spiritual ideas. So join me in The Flow every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern and let yourself be transformed.
Want help with your own celestial compass? Visit my site, empowermentunlimited.net, for Astro Insight forecasts for each week, month, and new and full moon. Want to explore the personal impact? Make a decision? Understand another person? It is possible. Click the Services tab to book a personal session with me. That address again, empowermentunlimited.net.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Welcome back to Celestial Compass. We're talking to Andrew Brewer about how he uses astrology in his past life research. Just before the break, you said there are basically three different factors you look at when you're examining two charts. One is a tight conjunction or tight conjunctions. The second was inconjuncts. Now, that's kind of unusual because when I was first learning astrology, this is not one of the major Ptolemaic aspects. It's not something that years ago was paid a lot of attention to. And it has this weird dynamic. The symbol looks like a seesaw, and it's often described as an aspect of adjustment. How did you identify this as an indicator of a connection between two people?
I think it was Gene Avery or somebody first mentioned it years and years ago. I forget where the idea first popped up. But I find that aspect seems to be significant to me. And so when I look at the conjunctions are easy, right? You can look at a conjunction, the oppositions are easy. be in conjunction, the King Kong is complicated because your brain doesn't normally think about it. So what I've done for me and for other people who are trying to do this is what I do is look at the degree measure. And what I want to do visually is to look at everything, all the numbers that are close together. So if you have two planets that are 23 degrees, I'm going to look at them and try to figure out what the relationship is. Because you're going to have some kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. And so to me, the degree measure are more important almost than the aspect. So if you think about past lives, for a past life to have an influence, there has, just like with astrology, we can look at astrology and say, is astrology reflective of something or is it determinant? It's the same kind of thing with past lives. So is the past life leading us towards a certain kind of action, or is it reflective of a certain kind of state of being? So to translate that into English, there has to be some way that we connect with a core essence. And so we look at that essence as a way that determines how we process information, like a template. I say that consciousness is non-local. Like we connect to it like a radio signal. Like your past life is in Google Cloud. I use this analogy in the past. And so we have a certain kind of, you know, URL or IP address for your past life. And so the degree measures become super, super, super important to me. And that we want to be on the same bottom dial. And that's why I initially look at the degree measure first and foremost before I worry about the aspects.
And I'm wondering, no, that makes absolute sense, because degrees do jump out at people. And I have found that blood relatives often have a sector of the zodiac where everybody has something around the same sign and the same degree. And it would make sense to me that this would go for other aspects of a soul that you might be part of, or a personality that might be kin to yours. But I find the in conjunct really interesting, because there's something that doesn't flow from that. There is a shifting that needs to happen between one person. If two people's Mercuries are in conjunct, the way they go about communicating doesn't automatically flow. They have to make allowances for the other person in order to get their point across.
Which I think is a really brilliant way of expressing it. So if you look at a past life, these theories of past lives, they have to find some way to assert their influence, yet there's a disconnect between I'm in a completely different body and immediate history, yet these influences are somehow trying to permeate my consciousness. I think that the evolution is that we come with an emotional template. I think that your past lives collectively are going to have a certain kind of similarity, both physical similarity, vocational similarity, but especially an emotional similarity. So if you look at the emotions as something that drive behavior, then the in conjunct, I think, really speaks to that, because, you know, I'm trying to figure out what these weird impulses are. Why did I spend 42 years trying to figure this out, right? These weird impulses. And I think the in conjunct, because it's kind of like off filter a little bit, really makes sense to me, because these lifetimes are part of me, yet they're also separate from me. And how do I integrate them? Like, you know, I'm schizophrenic here. How do I bring all these disparate parts into some sort of cohesive, you know, consciously controlled way of interacting with the world? So to me, the in conjunct is number two on my hit list.
So how does the opposition fit into that? When there are two placements that are really tightly opposite each other, does that have something to do with getting a different vantage point? I'm just spitballing here. Well, how does... How did you identify that, or did you just see that lining up in a number of the things you came up with?
So for me, I don't look at astrology, even though I'm using synastry here, I don't look at it like I would if I was comparing to romantic partner. What I'm looking at is, do the relationships seem significant? Are there commonalities? You know, you oftentimes will see oppositions with the moon, and you'll see oppositions with Pluto a lot. And so if you look at other points in the astrology that are very important to me, again, if I have the time, are the vertex and the anti-vertex, and also Lilith. So I pay attention to those too. I mean, my process, astrology is in some sense a minor piece to my process. It's really kind of 20% of it, but it is the ultimate glue. And again, for me, Kathy, if the astrology doesn't, if there aren't a lot of tight aspects, inner aspects between the two, then in my theory, how it would operate, to me, I throw them out. No matter if they're identical twins and the stories match and everything else, if I can't find anything between them, you know, after a fine-tooth comb, then I think that there is not enough symmetry between them to warrant saying, yeah, I think you were this person 75 years ago.
And how would someone make use of this kind of information? If someone feels a resonance with another person, then you start playing with the photos and putting them side by side and actually starting to overlap them, and then you see, well, there's some really tight links between this chart. Does it help someone make more sense of their current life?
It could. Again, in this particular case, though, Kathy, the astrology is more like an audit sheet after the fact. So if you look at soulmate, so if we look at astrology and soulmate, again, we could do synastry, the same kind of thing that I might do in trying to use it as a confirmation for a past life, would be the same thing. Is this a soulmate relationship? Is this relationship likely to be significant? Soulmates can be good or bad, but they're important. They're impactful. And so the degree measures for me are about impact. They're about magnitude. And so that's why I have such a tight, so I look at the inner aspects of being so important, tight, because we're looking at levels of magnitude. Yeah, you're nice, but I'm sort of over you. Or I've thought about you for, you know, 30 years. A lot of times we can see that in terms of the intensity.
So let's put this into something people, let's give an example here. One of the ones that caught my eye early on that you did involved Billie Eilish. Can you take us through that process?
So it's interesting you bring up Billie Eilish. You just brought this up to me about 2 minutes before we went on. So I actually looked up what I wrote about it at the time. And the reason I did this about Billie Eilish is you asked me if she was somebody else. I said, I don't think so. So initially, that's the backstory. So when I started thinking about Billie Eilish, because people asked me, you and actually some other people asked me, I'm going to figure this out because I thought about it, and what popped in my head, so this is the magical unicorn part, was that she was a reincarnation of a really famous musician, but someone who died in 1998. Now, there is no astrology that would tell you that. That's just sort of like a piece of whatever process I have. So I went with the idea, okay, I'm going to look for musicians who died in 1998. And the very first name on that list was somebody you may have heard of. His name was Frank Sinatra. Well, most people, I think, are going to look at Billie Eilish and go, Frank Sinatra, dude, you're like, high. So then I started looking at the pictures of them. And I've done the photo overlays. And the photo overlays are really kind of freaky because there's a very strong physical commonality. So I thought, wow, you know, that's kind of weird. But then I kept going with it. So then once I went past and I did my photo overlay super, super tight. If you compare them, like if you look at the photos I've done, they're really like incredibly close in terms of the basic facial architecture. And even some of the photos, there's a symmetry to the photos. It's like the photo itself, the way they're staged, you know, this again gets into causality. Why is it like that? These are chronological questions out of my pay grade. But we tend to see in past lives a sort of a weirdness to the angles of the photos. So then, see where you are.
Well, so let me pause you for a second here.
Sure.
Pause you for a second here. Now, for people who are having trouble visualizing this, initially what you would do with photos, or what you have started with, is you would take one side of one person's face and meld it with the opposite side of the other person's face.
Yes. I would slice them in half and stick the two halves together and see if the nose matched, smile matched, the eyes matched, if the face was the same size. Then, ultimately, I began to go, well, you know, this is good, but let's rev this up a little bit. So I started taking the photo and I processed where I would plop it right down on top of the other photo, and then I would do a transparency. And so then I would look at it, and if you kind of slide the transparency 0 to 100, it's really kind of a freaky process, but people don't see that process. So what I'm looking for are, do these people look like they're related? There should be a family resemblance. These should be kissing cousins that look a lot alike. And in my opinion, Billie Eilish and Frank Sinatra in this process passed that test. They also have a very strong, you know, obvious talent. You look at musicians tend to, in my experience with it, and whatever way you want to catalog that, musicians like to come back as musicians. And musical ability also seems to be a very unique skill set. I think more unique at a high-end level than being a psychic or probably anything else. Excuse me. So I had Billie. Then I had Frank, and I thought, oh my God, I'm sick of crazy stuff already. If I say Billie Eilish, it's reincarnation of Frank Sinatra, and just add to the madness associated with me. But then I looked at it, and then I did the astrology. I actually went because I looked up what I initially wrote about it. So I have all the astrology, bam, 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 laid out, and what they were. But for people like you, what's going on with you? What I do is I have an impression first, like an angel told me, or however you want to look at it. I have a vision in my head. Then I try to find a candidate who matches my vision. Then I stick them side by side. I go splice their photos in half and basically glue them together in PowerPoint. And then I go try to find their birthdays and pray that they have birth time. And then we do the astrology. So that's how I do it.
So what were some things that jumped out in the synastry between Billie Eilish and Frank Sinatra? Do you have that at your disposal?
I do. So I'm going to quote myself here. I'm going to kind of paraphrase what I have. So Frank's north node is 10 Aquarius. He has a conjunction in his natal chart of the north node at 10 Aquarius with Uranus at 12 Aquarius. Billie Eilish's moon is 12 Aquarius. And so this makes it exactly conjunct Frank's Uranus. I guess I should try to reflect Frank's date. But it also means that the moon and the moon node are conjunct. This has already gotten my attention. Also, Billie, and I normally wouldn't count this too much, but because it's the moon, her Neptune is 7 Aquarius. So the 7 Aquarius ties in with Frank's north node at 10. Then we go, what else do we have? They're both Sagittarians. They were both born the same week, only 86 years apart. So Billie's sun is 26 Sagittarius. Her south node, 27 Sagittarius. So she has a conjunction of, you know, her south node and her sun. This makes a trine to Frank's Mars at 27 Leo. Frank's Pluto to Cancer, and this opposes Billy's Mercury at 4 Capricorn and her Chiron, which is at 0 Capricorn. So there's a 2-degree window. Billy's Pluto is 15 Sagittarius. So to try to, and I should probably stop here if you need to take a break, but I'll say this real quickly. Pluto and moon aspects sort of scream karma to me in ways that the other things mm-hmm. don't. And also aspects to the moon nodes, and if you have it, to the vertex too. And the vertex.
We've got a couple of seconds here. So Pluto can be an indicator of karma or things coming from the deep past or some kind of ancestral line.
I think Pluto is indicative of things that are disrupting. I think Pluto likes to shake and bake. And so, again, with the idea that being Frank Sinatra is kind of a disruption to me, if that energy is behind what I'm doing now. That's the way I want people to look at the synastry of Pluto and the nodes, is that, and the in conjunct, is that there's a disruptive element to it. You're trying to integrate this. If you can bring two things together, you have a lot more power. But if you have two horses running opposite ends of the corral, then you've got a little bit of a problem.
And hold that thought. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes after our next break.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
How would you like navigational tools you can use on your own? Visit my site, empowermentunlimited.net, and click the Shop tab. There you'll find lots of talks and guides explaining the big influences at work now, like Saturn in Aquarius and Uranus in Taurus. You'll also find a variety of guided visualizations for relaxing, clearing your energy, or getting to know planetary archetypes. That address again, empowermentunlimited.net.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations, to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
If I could be you,
and you could be me, for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Welcome back to Celestial Compass. Today we're talking about astrology and past life research with Andrew Brewer. Now, something jumped out at me when you were talking about some of the links between the charts of Billie Eilish and Frank Sinatra, and that was the specific degrees that link them in Aquarius. And the reason that got my attention is that Saturn is currently traveling
right
across those degrees while he's squaring Uranus multiple times this year. The second square in June is at 13, and the one in December is at 11. So wouldn't we expect to see them both in the news somehow this year with this?
I would expect Julie's going to be in the news anyway, but yes, I would think that that would be significant. And, you know, I noticed that too when I just, again, I hadn't thought about Billie Eilish until you mentioned it before the show. Another thing jumped out at me is that I want to say this about Mercury. You have two people that we would think of as throat chakra dominant people, communicators, performers, who not only are super talented musicians, but they transcend that. Each of them is a celebrity, and that has its own sort of. And so the relationship between their Mercury is fascinating. So Billy has Pluto at 15 Sagittarius and Venus at 20 Sagittarius. She also had, we talked about earlier, she had the Moon at 12 Aquarius and Neptune at 7 Aquarius. So in both cases, you've got something very significant here that's 5 degrees apart. When you look at spatial relationships between planets will often manifest in time. So you're doing progressions for people. There's an evolutionary sequence with astrology, right? You can often see the time mechanism in these spatial relationships. So I would venture to say, just looking at this, Billie Eilish probably has something significant to happen in time. But Billie's Pluto is at 15 Sag, and her Venus is at 20 Sag. Frank's Mercury is at 17 Sag, and his Sun is 19 Sags. So you've got all this. Billy's Mercury is at 4 Capricorn, which opposes his natal Pluto, but he's also got something else. His Neptune is at 2 Leo. So that forms a quincunx with her Mercury. So you've got a lot of Neptunian kind of vibe here, too. So, which makes us look at Pisces. Well, Frank has a square between Sun and Mercury at 19 and 17 Sagittarius and Jupiter Chiron at 19 and 18 degrees Pisces. So to me, Neptune becomes super significant in the way in which we might look at them. So we could say there's a sort of a 12th house vibe to them and their relationship with one another. And the other thing the last thing I want to say is that Saturn tends to get a bad rap in astrology, right? Frank's Venus is 11 Capricorn. That makes a quincunx with Billy Saturn at 10 Gemini. And her Jupiter is 12 Cancer, so that opposes his Venus. But Frank's Saturn is 14 Cancer, so they have a conjunction between Jupiter and Saturn. There's just a bunch of stuff. I mean, we could continue. I mean, there's just tons of things between the two of them.
And there's a solar eclipse that's going to be opposing a solar eclipse at 19 and change Gemini in June. So I would expect stuff with both of them this year, just based on
That's going to hit her Venus and her Pluto. Right. So there could be a relationship issue that comes up. It could be all sorts of things. And it's going to hit Frank's Sun, so who knows?
Uh-huh. Well, new releases, re-releases of his recordings, we'll see. The final thing, and I just want to touch on this because we could talk for an hour and a half or two about this next topic, and without revealing the actual personalities, unless of course you want to, you yourself have been, the whole time I have known you, trying out dating all kinds of possible past lives, and it feels like you have recently honed in on something that has made a lot of things make sense. So if you could just kind of talk in generalities about that.
So as a child, I'm going to say this real quickly. As a child, had a lot of visions of things, which I ultimately figured out was Germany. Visions from Germany, Germany in the 1930s and 1940s. Hitler, Germany. And so this confused me. It was super, like the imagery was intense, super. And in some sense, I became very attuned to any sort of neo-Nazi kind of behavior. I was very anti-Semitism would always trip me out. A lot of things, I was very attuned to this time period and didn't know what it meant. And so I cried and I kept thinking I had been somebody who was connected to this period, somebody who had sort of like connection to like the major players, didn't know who that would be. Thought that, you know, I looked for actresses from the connection film business, and I went through all these different and I test drove 5 or 6 different people. And I would look at them and it kind of looked like me and it sort of fit, but they didn't really fit. And I was trying to square peg something into a round hole. And then I began to think, and I try to speed this up, I began to think this had to have been someone who was young, probably the child of somebody who had been sort of prominent in the So I began thinking about that, and I found someone, and I did her pictures. You've seen the pictures.
Yep.
Freaky. So that girl is Helga Goebbels. So as a child, Helga Goebbels, for those of you who may have talked about, Joseph Goebbels was he was the head of propaganda for the Nazis, like one of Hitler's closest contemporaries. And he and his wife had 6 children, and they murdered all 6 of their children because they couldn't imagine living in a world without Hitler. So all these children were murdered by their mother at the end of World War II. So having this pervasive, and I had said for years and years, whenever I find this German, there's going to be an incredible trauma. And you witnessed part of this, you know, an incredible trauma associated with whoever this turns out to be. And, I mean, there's more to it. I mean, but I do think that this is the past life. And I think it makes a lot of sense in relationship to the things that I had been looking for and had published about what I was looking for all throughout. And I think, so this raises an interesting question. Why would a normal person, using sort of loosely myself, why would they, golden boy, you know, jock, pretty boy, all that stuff, why would they just basically donate their life, try to find past lives? If there wasn't some PTSD type of thing behind it. And I think that this experience, and I do think that in my way of looking at it, this is like true, that perhaps that would make sense why someone would devote so much energy in trying to understand it. As an outgrowth of that, it helped me to really understand trauma with children, because as a psychic, I mean, that's most of my practice is people who are dealing with some sort of trauma trying to figure it out. You know, move forward. But yeah, so that's the Helga Goebbels. And there's even funkier parts to it, but I'm just, you know, bore everybody with that. But, and it took me a long time, I will say this real quickly. It took me a long time to go work through the layers of the trauma in order that I might be able to see what was there. So for somebody else, I don't have that. I can get a vision of them. It's just like a movie. It's just like a silent movie in my head. I watch it. I try to figure it out. I say it's this, and this. And I look and see if I find somebody that fits it. We're done. But this is a psychological evolution. This was much more complex for me. And as a result of that, then, again, what you're looking for is kind of a tapestry here, right? You're looking for patterns. So the astrology gives us an indication of patterning between 2 different people. But in my opinion, reincarnation, I believe everybody reincarnates. think everybody reincarnates a lot, and so there have to be other people. I did those types of celebrity things really as a way of saying, of getting people's attention to try to look at the process, the biometrics and the astrology. But in terms of a person trying to evolve, I think you have to look at the emotional impact that they bring. And this has an emotional value. And it was a catalyst for me to do a lot of stuff.
And this leads me to one of your books. You have several. You do have a book about sexual trauma, right?
Yes. Frozen Butterfly is the last book I wrote. Sexual abuse and the impact of sexual abuse is so pervasive. It is unbelievable what it does to people, how common it is, the impact that it has on people, and the ways in which they deal with relationships moving forward, the ways in which they deal with self-esteem. And so to me, it is the issue. And so I wrote a book called Frozen Butterfly, looking at, you know, how I think that manifests. From my vantage point, before I was a professional psych agent, the idea of sexual abuse was really not about me. I was 32 when I first became a psych agent. I'm 66 now. But once I started, it didn't take me long to realize that everybody I talked to, this was the truth. And I think we don't really honor that process. It's much more common with women than men. And I think we need to really try to help people move through this and look at ways in which they can understand themselves. Because often, and I wrote another book called Stuck My Root Chakra, which is about black sheep, and the black sheep, part of it, they're all connected. Because people, women who are abused, are typically taught that what happened to them didn't happen that way, so their cognitive framework is distorted right from the beginning. This is another problem. Children who've been sexually abused, verbally abused, they're taught that what happened to them didn't happen that way. So there's an element of confusion and also an element of disassociation in terms of who they're going to be.
I suspect a lot of people can identify with this. And where do people find these books?
Oh, they're on Amazon. Those books are on Amazon.
Okay. Okay, and they're easy. You have, what are some of your other ones, other titles that are out there?
I wrote a book called Karmic Outlaw, Past Life in the Fast Lane, about another past life as a race driver, Healy Vardy. Pictures of that are kind of freaky. I've written a bunch of books. I've written three recently, and I wrote seven a long time ago. The Metaphoric Mirror is probably the one that got the most attention at the time, but I wrote Stuck My Roots Chakra basically because of what I saw in the psychic world, love and light community with QAnon and all the rest of it. This was my rebuttal to QAnon, if nothing else. And, love and light game, and this is where that book came. And I had a lot of material over the years about sexual trauma. So common, too common. And we don't really recognize what it does to people. And I think it ties into my past life with a girl. It's related. So finding, you know, it seems strange why I had this affinity for issues with women, but I think because I have these live memories of these women, you know, it kind of blends. But try to find a way to integrate.
And remind people again where they can find information about you.
Andrew, A-N-D-R-E-W hyphen B-R-E-W-E-R .com. Me.
That's you.
Well, that's my website. But yes. Me, yes.
Well, this has been absolutely fascinating. Thanks for just going wherever the conversation was going to lead us. I had forgotten about some of those books, and you're a strong advocate for an unflinching advocate for all of this. And that's,
yes,
I always find it fascinating.
Definitely a bold voice in whatever ways in which I'm a bold voice. long ago, I used to always be introduced as the most controversial psychic in the world. I thought that was a good extreme, but it is what it is. I just don't think that people should be bullied. I'm not afraid to say that you could be bullied. And everything else is an outgrowth of that.
Well, I really appreciate your coming on today. And go check them out, people. Andrew-Brewer.com. And my forecasts and information are all at empowermentunlimited.net. And my written forecasts are also double published at Om Times. So strap in. May is going to be quite the interesting ride. And I'll see all of you guys in a couple of weeks.